A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. This week's guest is someone who really accepts themselves for who they are.
I feel like, honestly, when I was willing to embrace my vulnerability and say, I'm not okay sometimes, or I'm not perfect, things started to go really well for me. And I kind of believe that a willingness to be vulnerable makes you kind of invulnerable. So actually, like you said, it became my safe space. And I think it would be very easy to look at someone's curated social media and think, oh, it's so easy for them. But my whole, without wanting to sound like an arsehole, but brand is about being vulnerable and being yourself. So if I'm going to host an event, and that still does scare me a little bit, I won't just be like, here I am doing it and it's all perfect. I'll say on my stories, I have this thing coming up, feeling a bit jittery now, and then afterwards I'll be like, oh, how it went, or I feel like maybe I didn't do good enough. I'll just be as I am, how I am, when I am.
Caroline Foran is someone I personally find hugely motivating. She's a journalist, she's co-founder of Gaff Interiors, she's a podcaster and a best-selling author. Owning It, her first book, tells of her experiences with anxiety and offers practical advice to deal with it. She lives with her husband Barry and their adorable dog Bear, and she's currently working on her third book. We sat down to have a chat in the summer, and this is how it went. So Caroline, it's great to have you here.
Thank you so much for asking me. I feel so privileged.
We just stop. I'm absolutely delighted because, you know, the few times we have met over the past, probably the last year really, yeah. Every time I meet you, I feel like I bathe in your creativity. You know, and I mean this very genuinely. You're somebody who seems to just seamlessly get a lot of shit done all the time. You're constantly creating. And I would love, there's so many questions I want to ask you. And I suppose I'm going to go right in with, did you always know when you were, you know, a young Caroline, that you were going to be this type of creative force in the world and want to do so many different things, because you have a lot of strings to your bow.
I had no idea that I would be doing what I'm doing now. I definitely always had a creative streak, I suppose. I was always drawing fashion stuff on napkins when my parents would be having dinner, and I was like going to be a fashion designer or a pop star. It just changed all the time, but it was definitely always creative, always ideas, and switching from one thing to the next was always kind of my thing. I'm a very overactive imagination, which I think lends itself to being a creative person. And then as I grew up, I kind of thought that I had to get into a very, you know, standard job sort of situation, like whether it's a corporate environment. And I think, to be honest, fitting into that mold that I thought was required of people as they grow up gave me a lot of anxiety, because I couldn't imagine sitting still for too long. And I went through a very hard time with anxiety that I got, I guess, just completely propelled into this world of working for myself and doing different things. But it was kind of by accident. And to be honest, I wouldn't have wanted it had I known what I had to go through. Do you know what I mean? But I was straight away in college, like, definitely drawn to anything that was with cameras or audio, and anything that was just really creative, I suppose, was for me, because I just didn't feel like, I didn't have a maths brain, I didn't have a science brain. I was so bored by that stuff. And so I started writing and I became a journalist, which was just, I thought, this is a job. People can get paid for this, for expressing their ideas. And to this day, it still kind of feels like, you feel like a bit of a fraud when you think about what people have to do to earn money. And here I am being like, 10 things I like about the weather.
Isn't that just a sign, though, that that's your calling? Because they say, you know, when you're doing what you're good at and what you're meant to be doing, you feel energized from it. You don't feel drained, and it doesn't feel like work.
It doesn't. And I always say, like, my husband's an engineer, and I actually couldn't tell you what he does. He talks to me about work and my brain just switches off. I'm like, I have no idea. He's like some sort of, I don't know, coder of some kind. And I'm there thinking, oh, well, I did. Like, I can articulate everything I'm doing, because I feel, and I say it to him, like, a monkey could do what I'm doing. So I actually end up kind of dumbing down what I do, I guess, because it comes quite naturally to me. Yeah. But maybe to someone else, I guess, but Barry would say, well, getting up in front of a room of people and hosting an event, he'd rather eat his own arms. And I'm like, but anyone could do that, you know. So
it's your safe zone. And it's interesting, because I'm sure there are people listening, and I know I'm still figuring things out. I feel that at the age of 40, that I'm only kind of now getting going on what really I'm good at, or what matters to me and what I can offer. But for you, like, obviously you've felt this kind of innate, I just need to create, I need to do. What would you say to somebody listening who's maybe stuck in a job that is not fulfilling them? And we all know how tough it is. You got to pay bills, you got to keep the show on the road. Mm-hmm. And it is tough to do that. But would you have any words of wisdom from your own experience on actually going after what you're good at?
Yeah, I think it's obviously, we hear all the time about people who've just quit the 9-to-5 and gone and pursued their dreams. And that's not feasible and terrifying for a lot of people who have maybe kids at home, mortgage bills to pay. So what my advice would be to, you know, people are encouraged to take an hour out to do exercise. I think take an hour out of your day if you can, and develop some sort of, I call it a side hustle. So some sort of creative outlet where it's not taking you away from your job. You're still earning your money, but you can create something, whether it's someone who's into making recipes or cooking or something that gives you that slight little buzz that you feel like it's satisfied. And then you start that slowly. And if that becomes something, then you can start to look at, well, is it actually lucrative? Could I make the switch? So you can gradually bring a creative element into your already existing scenario. And it shouldn't drain you, because it should be exciting you, like you said. So even if it's something you do on a Sunday morning early. So that would be where I would start, is just think about what really makes you feel good and start doing it for the love of it, not for the money. And maybe, you know, the money will come.
Yeah. And you know what? You're speaking from a place of somebody who, like, you are very open and honest, and your safe space is vulnerability, and you've had your own struggles, which is why you went on to write Owning It and another book and another in the works right now. You know, you're not just preaching to somebody who is, you know, looking at you going, well, she has everything going on. You are somebody who has their own struggles.
I think that's just so important. And I think anyone who says that to me maybe doesn't follow me and doesn't see me actually putting out my vulnerability every day. And actually, I feel like, honestly, when I was willing to embrace my vulnerability and say, I'm not okay sometimes, or I'm not perfect, things started to go really well for me. And I kind of believe that a willingness to be vulnerable makes you kind of invulnerable. So actually, like you said, it became my safe space. And I think it would be very easy to look at someone's curated social media and think, oh, it's so easy for them. But my whole, without wanting to sound like an arsehole, but brand is about being vulnerable and being yourself. So if I'm going to host an event, and that still does scare me a little bit, I won't just be like, here I am doing it and it's all perfect. I'll say on my stories, I have this thing coming up, feeling a bit jittery now. And then afterwards I'll be like, oh, how it went, or I feel like maybe I didn't do good enough. I'll just be as I am, how I am, when I am, all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think for me, it's not just that I'm like, I want people to think I'm real. It's also a defense mechanism and a coping mechanism for me. So if I say I don't have everything figured out, no one else can say it to me.
Yes, I get you. You have no skeletons in the closet.
So therefore, I'm invulnerable. What can you do to me?
Yeah, what can you do? And do you feel that when you do that, when you go online and you express how you're feeling, that you get a strength from it?
Massively. And I was only having this conversation with someone earlier. Like, going on social media is a bit of a double-edged sword for me, because I draw a lot of strength from being able to share things. And, you know, if I have a really bad anxious day, while before I would have thought, put the phone away, actually now what I do is I say it to my followers and it completely normalizes it for me. And then people message me and they're like, oh, I feel that way too. Or like, you've got this, you're doing great. And it's just stuff that I know I could tell myself, but it's just empowering to know there's a network of people there for you. But at the same time, going on social media, I guess, can trigger anxiety as well, because you're comparing yourself to other people. You're, you're under pressure to put out content regularly and to stay relevant and to be funny and to be, you know, because when you work for yourself, it's like online, it's not just like a bit of fun online and then it's my private life. It's they've kind of blended into one.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to have those boundaries. But it is definitely a really lovely experience to be able to connect with people. Like I had a conversation with someone, a woman from Bangladesh last week, who found my podcast, ordered my book, got it delivered all the way there. And she's starting this group over there to try and encourage people to talk more about mental health because it's so frowned upon over there. So that to me,
that's amazing.
Yeah, that to me was just like,
that's
wow,
so cool.
The power of social media in a good way. And I just tried to focus more on those things, but also obviously take myself offline and into real life where real connections are.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what? Just back to that again. Isn't that what it's all about when you look at what a person's life purpose is? It's meant to be something that fills you up and you feel fulfilled. But then in turn, you're helping other people. And that's it in the most glorious sense of the word. Yeah. Bangladesh.
I know. It's
so
crazy.
Cool.
Yeah. And I do feel more. I used to, you know, I had a really hard time. And I know we have all been through hard times and you can't compare one to the other. But for so long, I was struggling and I just wished so much that I could be someone else or not be that way or that I wish it never happened. And I just was so full of anger and regret as if, you know, if I chose to walk down this street instead of that one, none of this would have happened. And only now I'm really starting to settle with the idea that there is maybe a bigger plan and this was my purpose all along. And I just know I don't tire of it because for me, I guess if I was to summarize like my purpose, it would be normalizing what we all go through so that everyone can feel a little bit better and lift everyone up. And I think because we're all walking around trying so hard to not show our vulnerability, whether it's professional, personal, in relationships, with friends, and we're all actually going through all the same stuff. So why can't we just all let go of the pretense and normalize it? And why can't a CEO say, do you know what, I'm going to go home early, I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed today. Why do they have to be so have their shit together all the time? Because none of us do.
No.
So why can't we all agree to just let the shit go and be vulnerable and be accept that we're all learning all the time? And that's the only way I've been able to forge ahead and do what I do. And I guess for so long I thought that to be successful I had to be okay, I had to be fully better or fixed or have everything figured out. And I've had successes that to me I would define them as successes because they're about personal growth for me more so than financial success, but I've had successes in spite of all of the stuff that makes me feel like held back.
Yeah, it resonates with me so much because, and I'm sure to people listening as well, anyone who's gone through something big in their life that maybe shakes them up and makes them look at things a bit differently will get what you're saying. And for me, realizing that I have something that I need to, I suppose, equip myself to deal with a bit better and make myself feel a bit better. And before I was diagnosed with cancer, I would have described myself as a very proud person. Mm. So despite the fact that people who knew me would say that I was, you know, I was maybe real in my ways or whatever, but I was also afraid of showing vulnerability. I wasn't brilliant at that.
No, and I don't think we're good at that as Irish people as well. You know, I think we're all very don't air your dirty laundry in public. It's probably a generational thing as well. Mm. And I remember even when I started posting on Instagram saying, you know, I'm having a lot of panic attacks and I'm really, really struggling, and just sort of documenting it at the first while, some of my friends are like, maybe you shouldn't really put that out there. Like maybe, or my parents were also like, oh, she's actually telling the world. Whereas it just seems so unnatural to do that. And I think that's making people suffer more.
Yeah. What happened though? When was it the moment that you clicked and you went, no, I'm not going to listen, even as well-meaning as they are, especially friends and family, they do, they love you. They want, you know, they only want the best for you. But when did you realize, no, I have to do this for me?
I think for me, it was a case of, so I was going through really crippling anxiety. It kind of felt like it hit me out of the blue. And I went from being a very confident, happy person doing well in work to not being able to leave my house and thinking I was mentally broken and I was never going to be better. And I was absolutely terrified. And for me, what was such a hard thing was like telling everyone. And like every time a friend would come over and trying to explain it and justify it and then be like, but you look fine. But what's wrong with it? But you have a great life. But look at you. You're in a lovely apartment with your lovely boyfriend. And I was like always feeling that made it, you know, so guilty that I was going through a hard time when people have cancer and people go through so much worse. And that was one of the hardest things. And I was like, I'm sick of trying to defend myself. It's not that anyone else was necessarily judging me, but I was definitely judging myself.
Yeah.
So I just thought if I put it out there, everyone will, not that everyone's thinking about me, but for me, if I put it out there, everyone will understand why I've retreated from social media, why I'm not at all the parties at the moment, why I'm gone quiet, why I can't meet you for coffee. It's not because I'm being rude, it's because I can't leave my house right now. So for me to put it out there was just a massive weight off my shoulder. And I think that was honestly like step one of, for me, owning it. And to this day, whether it's a wave of anxiety or whether it's, you know, going through stressful time or anything, I want to own it and to normalize it, because you sure as hell can't make it go away.
Yeah.
In the click of your fingers.
No. When was that? How many years ago are we talking about?
That was in 2014. So I was, but yeah, I still was struggling for about a year beyond that of trying to get myself back to basics.
Yeah.
Of being able to go to the shop without feeling horrific, being able to, you know, go for dinner in someone else's house, like, or even to this day I struggle, you know, people say, oh, come over for dinner, and oh, she might as well just stay over, you're here now, and I'm like, oh god, no, get me back to my own house. So
I think a lot of us are like that.
Yeah, so
I like your own bed.
Yeah,
you like your own space.
Oh, I just, and especially I, but also a lot of that was embracing the way I am. It wasn't like trying to be like, oh, I want to not feel anxious. It was like, well, do you know what, I don't want to go camping in a festival field, I'd absolutely hate it. So my husband is off to one now in a while, and I'm like, I'm going down to visit my parents in Dingle, and you do you and I'll do me. And why should I? I don't have to prove anything to myself by going to this festival that, sure, I actually have no interest in. So a big learning for me also was figuring out the difference between my personality and my anxiety. What actually suits me as a person and what is being dictated to me by my anxiety, because they're very different. And if you deny your personality, you're not going to feel good.
Okay, and is that, if you don't go for what's right for you, instinctively, does that lead, just that obviously just leads to more anxiety?
Well, yeah, like if I said no to a great opportunity work-wise that I knew in my heart, I know I'm feeling fearful about this, but it'd be really good for me and I'll come through and I'll learn a lot. If I said, the question I ask myself is, if you didn't have anxiety, would you want to do it?
Oh, very good.
And then if the answer is yes, it's your anxiety talking. If the answer is no, it's your personality, it doesn't suit you. I think it's so important to lean into who you are, what makes you tick.
That's a great question, though. Even if somebody listening doesn't have anxiety per se,
but we all have, holding
we
you
all
back.
Exactly, we all have fears.
Yeah,
you know, and it is the stuff that we all have: dreams, wants, desires.
Yeah,
and when you examine, you know, what you want, and you think of, you know, all the elements that are required to make it happen, it's yourself usually holding you back. And 100%. I'm speaking from personal experience here.
Yeah,
it's those personal fears, isn't it?
Yeah. So if you didn't have fear, would you want to do it?
Yeah.
If everything could go right, would you want to do it?
Yes.
And if you're still like, oh no, it's just not my scene, then don't push yourself into that environment, because then you're, that is creating stress, because you're, it's like shoving a square peg into a round hole, I find.
Yeah. This is just, this is exactly what I suppose I was dreaming this podcast would be about, these kind of conversations, because I think this is the stuff that matters to people.
Yeah.
You know, it's recognizing what we have in our lives already and what we want, and then what is that bit in the middle maybe that's holding us back from achieving it. Okay, so in terms of where you're at now, you're in the process of writing the third book. You've had a really successful podcast series. Is it hard to plan your day, or do you have a typical day?
For a long time, I tried to take what I do and shove it into a traditional working situation, like a sit at my desk for 8 hours. And I used to feel so guilty if I wasn't doing that, because I'd feel like my husband would come home, he was my boyfriend at the time, and he's like, oh, what did you do today? I'm like, well, watched some friends. But now I understand. And again, it's just about like time, give yourself time and being intuitive and knowing what works for you. So I will have a certain amount of appointments per week, but I won't necessarily know what they are. Things are so up in the air. And actually, that's very counterproductive to someone with anxiety, I suppose, wants to know what's happening and be in control. And I had to sort of let go a little bit with that. And so now these days, very little would be planned far in advance, and I just kind of roll with it. And I could do it a little bit more discipline on putting structure on things. But if I feel like having a nap in the middle of the day, I'll do it. If I want to lie on, I'll do it. If I want to get up and go to the gym, I'll do it. And it's just about trusting my body and trusting the way that I work. And if I want to sit down and write 2 chapters, well, that has never happened, in one go at night, I'll do it.
Yeah,
you know, so it's just, I guess my mom always said to me, in every aspect of everything, she just said, obey your body. And for me, that's been such a massive learning, is like, you know, feeling guilty is like, I'm absolutely knackered, but well, you have to get up at 7 a.m. because everyone else is. I'm like, oh, obey your body. Your body's communicating with you. And I just have so much respect for my body now, because for so long it was trying to tell me something that I wasn't listening.
Yeah.
So now I listen. I don't listen with like a panicked ear, but I'm like, what can I do to make you feel better now?
Yeah.
What can work for you? So with professional stuff, I've definitely had to learn to roll with it. And if I'm feeling really overwhelmed and tired, I'll say, I'm just going to close it now. I can't write anything. My brain has gone to mush. I'll come back at it tomorrow.
Yeah. You know, this is a big thing of mine as well, like listening, tuning into the body. And the more you do it, the better and the quicker you get at kind of spotting the signs.
Yeah.
Are you like, boom, straight in when you know something is up?
Yeah. Yeah. Very rarely will it take me off guard now. And I remember a therapist I had in the early days was like, it's like seeing a train coming down the tracks from far away and knowing when to get off before it comes. And usually some way my body will tell me in some way, like I'll know, I'll start to feel a bit like antsy if I've been burning the candle about then, so if I've just had too much on, and I will know now, okay, I'm going to pencil in a couple of days or I'm going to do nothing. I'm not going to make plans for people and I'm not going to feel guilty about it, because I need to. I'm actually quite introverted in some ways as well, and I need to recharge my batteries by myself. So it's taken me, I guess, this long to know when to step out of my comfort zone and when to actually respect it and go back into it as well.
Yeah. What is the dream situation in terms of minding yourself and nourishing yourself and feeling calmer and better? What would you do? Would it be different things?
All very simple stuff. Just really going back to basics and prioritizing my sleep. I love sleeping, and if my sleeping's off, something's wrong. So I'm a real home bird. I love comfort food. I go back to probably being quite childlike. I love nothing more than, I have this throw that is just the softest thing in the world. I just get on the couch and lie down, and my husband will say, you just lie down there and put on some absolute crap on TV and you know, he'll make food, and I'll pare back things like sugar and caffeine and alcohol, and I'll just plan. I've gotten good at saying, you know, if you feel bad for whatever reason, you can't necessarily change the scenario, but you can say, what's the one thing right now that might make you feel a little bit better?
Yeah. And are you good at that? Because a lot of time when we are feeling, you know, the pressure and whatever level, we will turn to things like sugary snacks or a glass of wine or whatever it is. Do you know from experience, this does not make me feel better?
Yeah, I've had to learn the hard way. And I know, especially for anxiety, sugar. I mean, if I'm having an anxious week, if I even have one chocolate, I'll feel jittery. So
really?
I just know now, okay, what's the low hanging fruit in this situation? Take that away. At least give your body a chance, because you're already stimulated, so don't overstimulate it even further. But I would struggle, and I know it's a slippery slope, but with the old glass of Prosecco or something, because like when you feel anxious, it takes the edge off, obviously, but then you don't want to get into a scenario where
it doesn't go away
and you want to have a drink because of your anxiety or because it makes you feel calm. It's just there's such a gray area there between drinking for, I guess, the right reasons and drinking for the wrong reasons. And Jesus, I don't drink a huge amount, but I would probably look to alcohol sometimes as a therapeutic thing, which I think a lot of people do. So I just try to be aware of that.
Yeah. And it's something that a lot of people are talking about right now. And I think it's a good topic of conversation. It's one that probably we need to discuss in a completely non-judgmental way and be very open about it, because what's right for one person is not going to be right for somebody else.
Yeah.
But one person is maybe not more right than the other. But in Ireland, there is obviously, if we have a massive, massive, massive drinking culture.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify.
Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Love a glass of wine. I really do. I enjoy it. But I know when, you know, I have a mad blowout and I feel like rubbish and I go, that's it. I'm off. I'm never drinking again. Mm. And for some people, I suppose they get to a point where they decide, that's it. I don't need this in my life. And I think that's a very brave decision to get to, particularly in a culture where it's all about the pints and it's all about the glasses of wine and are you ill and go on. Yeah. And as you said, for especially when you're in an industry as well, where there's an element of performance, be it on a stage or whatever. And if you get into that kind of a habit where I need something to calm my nerves, it's a dangerous zone to get into, because where is it going to end?
I really notice it in social situations. And I think I was having this conversation with someone else as well about social media apparently connecting us with people, but actually I think it's damaging our skills in a social environment in the real world. And while I might curate and have a moment to think about what I'm putting up and, you know, you edit yourself online, you can't really edit yourself in a conversation in real life. So I'm noticing now a little bit more that when I'm at parties where I know loads of people but no one particularly well, and you're having little conversations with many people, I feel like I need the drink to help. And I really don't like that I feel that way. And maybe it's just a crutch of something to hold. And I feel the social anxiety is more now than it ever was in those kinds of situations. And I kind of think social media has something to do with it, because there's a lot of buffers there between you and people.
Yeah.
And we're actually, you know, not spending that much time with real people because of it.
Big time.
I could be on my at home all day for 9 hours but just be on my stories and feel like I have company, but it's not real.
Yeah.
You know, so I do think with social anxiety, that's probably the reason why most people drink out socially. And my own brother had really, really hard times with a speech difficulty, with a stammer. And he used to not be able to order a certain drink because he wouldn't be able to get the words out until he had a couple of drinks. Okay. So he had to kind of realize that as well. Like, he was so fluent when he had drinks, but it was like, well, you don't want to go down that route. You want to address it. So I just think it's something. I still probably go home and have a glass of Prosecco tonight. But, you know, just to be aware
of it, totally.
Especially when you're doing it for mental health.
Yeah.
Reasons.
Yeah. And I know I love how frank you are. And I think the more we talk in a very honest way and not, I suppose, hold ourselves back for fear of perception or whatever, because actually all stories on the scale of non-drinking and drinking deserve to be heard. And I just think it's an interesting topic that seems to be jumping up on different people's social platforms at the moment. So it's obviously up for a reason. You mentioned Dingle there. You said your hubby was going off to a festival and you were heading down. I've seen you down with your folks, and I've just like, if ever I felt like I wanted to be transported to a place, it's when I'm watching you and your stories in the pub and the music. Dingle is fabulous anyway, but the crack looks amazing down there. Please tell me about your connection to Dingle and your families.
So I wasn't born there, neither were my parents. My mom is from Cork, my dad is a Dub, but my dad played music all through his life. He actually was like support actor for Christy Moore at one point, I think.
Wow. Okay, so we're dealing with a really good musician.
Well,
and your dad.
Well, I don't know. If he listens to this, yes, he is,
yes,
really
dad,
good. I don't even know if he's listened to my podcast or even read my book. But they just started. They were like going around country doing ballad gigs, kind of stuff like that. And my mom was in. Did you ever hear something called the Tops of the Towns?
Yeah, of course.
And so she was.
Hey, I'm 40. Of course, I have.
They both worked in Aer Lingus. They met there, and then they were always doing these gigging weekends away, and they went to Dingle a lot. I think my mom would have gone there with her family when she was a kid because they were from Cork, so it was just, let's go half an hour down the road for the summer holiday for 2 weeks, and they just fell in love with it. And then they eventually bought a site. My grandparents, they had a bit of money. They did that, and then all my grandparents died within 9 months of each other. And then they built the house, a holiday home. And then we were going down every year or several times a year. And then eventually when I was in my house and my brother is pretty set up, he's older than me, in London, they were like, we're going to sell the family home. We're moving down to Dingle and we're going to having like an early retirement, and I remember I was freaked. I was like, what? Like, you can't leave me. And now I just see how unbelievably happy they are, and I didn't realize how much a difference it would make for them to be there. And Dingle is like this little microcosm. It's not like living in rural Ireland. There's so much going on there. There's so much culture. There's different festivals every week. I got invited to a literary festival they're having in November now, a brand new one. They've got the film festival. My mom, I actually have to like book in a time to ring her because she's got so much going on. She's in a choir and loads of different things. So it's just when I go down there, time just slows down. I actually leave my phone at home or wherever, and we go out and just breathe in the sea air, and we just have nice comfort food. And I probably do resort to slightly like childlike dependency. And of course, when my brother's there and all, we start killing each other, having family arguments, and I go back to being like a 12-year-old little girl. I think everyone assumes that role when they're back with their parents.
I totally agree with you.
But it's nice.
Doesn't matter what age you are.
And you know what? It's just so nice to be looked after sometimes. And you know, my mom said, come down now. So I had a stressful period for a while, and she was like, I want you to just come down and we'll just have some nice, they call them wet dinners. So like, you know, like gravy and mashed potato and roast chicken. And that to me is like the ultimate comfort in like, particularly in a bowl.
It has to be
in a bowl. I have to be on a couch with a blanket. So just that kind of really basic stuff that makes me feel nurtured.
So I'm just thinking of you like I don't know, just all wrapped up even on a hot summer's day.
Oh yeah.
You're there sweating away, eating the schmuds.
My dad, I'm absolutely roasting just looking at you. And I'm like, I'm just a cold creature. I can't help it. But I do definitely, comfort is my big thing. And I think in these days with all the kind of go get 'em badass career stuff, people are saying how awful the comfort zone is and how you get trapped in it and it's holding you back. And actually, I think it's very important that we obviously step out of it, but we also have respect for it and go back into it, because that's where you rest and that's where you heal.
Absolutely.
So I call them stretch zone experiences, where you step outside of your comfort zone a little bit, you go into the worry or fear zone, and then you come back and you take what you've learned with you, and then your comfort zone expands. So it's not about living up here on number 9, 10, always on the edge, because you'll absolutely burn out.
Yeah.
So I step out of my comfort zone, do my thing, and then I go back to it.
I love this. And it is about like recharging, you know, retreating, all of that. There's a time and a place for everything. If you can't be go, go, go all the time.
No, and people who are go, go, go all the time will hit that roadblock.
Yeah.
And then it's, unfortunately, it's only when people go through really hard times that they realise the importance of looking after themselves. And I hope that whether people are reading my books or listening to our conversation now, they don't have to get to that point of complete burnout before they realise how much, for me, a metric of success, feeling well is.
Yeah. Just going back to your folks again, and the fab, I suppose, upbringing you must have had with all this amazing music in the house. Are you guys, yourself and your brother, are you musical as well?
I play the piano.
Okay.
My brother is very mathematical. Tried to learn the guitar. Wasn't great at it. Sorry, Daniel. So I would be, and my nana would have played the music. So me, my dad and my nana, we were just like really creative. And then my mom's side would be more kind of businessy side, I suppose.
Okay. I bet you have savage sing songs, do you?
Oh yeah, they're the best. They're so good. Every time we're down in Dingle, my dad will have several guitars, whip them out.
What are the party pieces? Give them to me.
Oh god, with all the old ballads, my favourite one is Grace.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Absolutely beautiful. My dad, I ask him to sing it every time, and he's like, oh Caroline, I don't remember it. I'm like, you do know it. And it makes me cry every time. I think it's just the most beautiful
amazing
thing.
Oh, fab.
And it just brings me back to comfort and childhood.
Completely. And when you're down in Dingle and the sea, it's so cleansing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's all of that.
You sleep like a baby.
Because you live in the space of being completely open and honest, I kind of want to just go a little bit further afield and talk about like what you think this whole living of a life is all about. So do you think that when you die, that's the end? Do you think there is no more? Or do you believe in the concept of heaven and hell? What is your belief system? What happens to us?
If I think about the fact that there's nothing else going to happen, that freaks me out. And I think we wouldn't get out of bed and we wouldn't be motivated if we didn't think there was something higher happening. I'm not religious, but I feel maybe a spiritual sort of connection. I definitely feel that everything happens for a reason. So I don't know what it is. I haven't put a name on it or quantified it or anything, but I do feel that there is some maybe divine thing happening above us that's got the bigger picture in its mind, and we're just tiny parts of it. I always visualize heaven, and I always, you know, from maybe I think it's that particular episode of The Simpsons where they have heaven and it's like a steps with clouds and the gate and then, I don't know, not letting someone in. Maybe that was a dream, I don't know. But I imagine it like as the way a child would imagine heaven, and it's, for me, that's just a comforting thing. If I start to think about death or our mortality, which I know is sometimes we need to confront it because it'll make us snap out of something trivial, But if I give it too much thought, I really start to freak out. I cannot understand why we're here for such a short time. It freaks me out. Mm. And I would like to think that we are here for a reason. And I would like, I think for me, one of the biggest motivations is to make a difference to even one person and to leave some sort of legacy behind and to have lived a life where I wasn't so focused on the end goal, which might never be reachable because it's always changing. But for my goal to be driven by what kind of lifestyle do I want to have every day? And that doesn't, you don't need loads of money for that. You need very small little, you don't need much for that at all.
Yeah.
And I think if we could all realize that, I think that's for like the secret to happiness, really, is to think about the life you want to have every day and not where do I want to be, or I'll be happy when, or I'll be happy if. Very, very simple things, I think, are really what it's all about. But again, I think it's only when you go through something hard that you realize how important that is and how not important so much of the stuff that we're striving towards really is.
You have so much wisdom at such a, I mean, I know, you know, it's all relative. So me saying you're young, you might not feel it for you, but you are.
I do feel very young. You are. I'm 31. I feel.
Yeah. Do you know? And yeah. You have, like, you speak in a way, you speak like somebody who has lived already a long life of experience. And I suppose when you are faced with challenges, it does almost, it expands.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I feel like I have an old soul, and I've always really connected with people who are older than me, even with things like music. Like, my most played music on Spotify is like Frank Sinatra, all that stuff. And Barry's like, would you ever enter this century? And I just feel like I was meant to be born in a different era or something, a bit like Ryan Trubbery, the way he says that.
Yeah.
I just like love the idea of just like the simpler times.
Were you always this way? Did you always feel like there was something bigger, and, you know, or is it something that has come deepened over time?
Yeah, absolutely. Because when I was feeling really bad and I was going through a really hard time, I just kept saying, why is this happening to me? Why would whoever would do this to me? Or what have I done to deserve this? So I guess I've always spoken as if there's something else going on. And I think as a kid, I think all kids probably need to have some sort of creation in their head, whether it's heaven, hell, God, anything to help them just rationalize and understand life. Because how else would a child cope with death in the family? Like so my mom's dad died when she was pregnant with me, which would have been quite hard for her. And then my other three grandparents died within a couple of months of each other. And I remember, this is terrifying.
It's really intense.
I went, my parents.
You said 9 months before, did you?
Yeah.
So like 9 months,
one,
all.
And then a couple, another one later on, and then another one. Okay. So 9 months. And I was just like, what the hell is going on? I remember my parents brought me to see, and I've said this before, brought me to see my granddad in the morgue. And a while ago, my granddad was like swinging me around, happy as Larry. And then they brought me in to see him, and the coffin lid had broken his nose.
Okay.
And I'm looking at my lovely granddad in the coffin, white, dead, cold, with a smashed face. And I've never been more terrified in my life.
Yeah, okay.
And I actually do think, and I remember for ages after that, I refused to sleep by myself. I was like, and my parents would say things like, oh, but your nan and granddad are with you. And I was like, don't fucking tell me that. They're a ghost. Like, I don't want them to be with me. They're like, that was the worst thing you could say to someone with a very overactive imagination. And I remember,
it's so funny now, but
I was traumatized. Yeah. And I think it's those little things for a kid where a kid can't rationalize it, and a parent doesn't necessarily indulge the kid because, like, don't be silly. But actually, if my parents had sat down with me and tried to understand my worries,
yeah,
maybe I would have processed it a little bit better. And I think it's so important, even to this day and age, for any adult as well, is to treat their anxieties and worries as though it's an inner child, because it's your amygdala. So it's a part of your brain that feels fear and worry, and it reacts like a child who feels threatened and scared. And if you just say, don't be ridiculous, you're going to make it freak out even more, like a little monkey inside your head. Whereas if you come down to its level and say, okay, what is this about? What can I do to make you feel better? It's like telling a child, don't be stupid. But actually, if you come for the child, they feel understood, they feel heard. So for me, it's the same with yourself.
Yeah, I really trust in the concept of inner child work. Yeah. And you've kind of mentioned it in different ways throughout our conversation.
Apparently my inner child's 3 years old.
What? Were you skeptical before you actually kind of looked at it as
a
concept?
I've always been open to things like star signs, and we were talking about Mercury being retrograde. I love blaming that on everything. So yeah, I've always had like a spiritual thing to me, and I think it just helps to make sense of things. I think if, you know, I have arguments with my husband, he's an engineer and he's very scientific, and I'm like, he's telling me, no, this can't happen, this is not possible. And I'm like, but that's just such a grim way to live. Like, it just, even whatever I can do to put meaning on things to make life easier for me, I do.
Yeah.
And I think I've always done that. But at the same time, when you live, probably when your mind is kind of up there in the ether, you can kind of feel overwhelmed and anxious about things that aren't actually real. So for me, a common sort of thing I have to do is bring it back with my anxious thoughts. It's like, how much of that is actually a fact or opinion? Mm. How much is that actually happening? What is the proof to say that you're going to fail this test or whatever? So, you know, because if you have a wild imagination, you can think about the worst possible case scenario all the time.
Yeah. Getting back to three-year-old Caroline, how did that come about?
So I was doing a couple of sessions of numerology with a numerologist, obviously. And it was my ex.
For those listening who have never heard the concept before, like, what the hell does that mean? Yeah. What is numerology? How would you describe it?
Oh, God. It's been a long time since I did it. It's basically just looking at your life's path and your, I guess, the plan for you based on your numbers. So it's more specific than your star sign. So it's the time of the day of the year that you came into the world. And we all have a specific number. You probably know more about this than I do.
No, not really. But I do know a tiny bit, but you're describing it far better than I would.
It was a woman who, my ex-boyfriend's mother knew this woman. And I was like, oh, Jesus, here we go. She like booked me in for my birthday and I was really skeptical. And the woman was just like a really normal, lovely woman. Mm. Her name was Grania, actually. And I was like, well, she's obviously not bats, so I'll sit down with her for a while. And she started telling me things about myself that I was just like, you are literally describing me in a nutshell. And it was so comforting for me to hear it. And she told me I was going to be a writer, but long before I'd even written an article, I was still in college. And just so many things. And then I went to her a few times and it just was such a comforting thing. And she just told me, whatever way she did the maths, you could figure out what your inner child age was. And so she's the one who said, your inner child is three. And I was like, that is so right, because my inner child is so frightened and, you know, is so young and hasn't gotten that stage yet where it can rationalize things. So that was, for me, it was a comfort. I mean, I wouldn't put too much weight on it. I wouldn't live my life according to it. But I think those kind of things are nice, you know. And I actually have been saying I'd love to go back to a fortune teller. Actually, I haven't been to one ever. I'd love to go to one. But I think you're looking for answers, you know. And I'm very terrified that they'll tell me I'll die or something.
It's an interesting one. It's probably a conversation for another day. Yeah. But I do think there are a lot of people who are genuinely gifted out there and a lot who are coming from a business point of view. Yeah. So it's about really finding the ones that are the real deal,
fairness,
as it were.
If I knew someone who was really gifted, I'd be like, monetize that shit.
Yeah. So looking at your life so far, from, you know, infant to child, to teenager, young woman, into where you're at now, 31. Could you say there was a period of your life that were, you know, where you were the most content, as it were? Or do you feel you're there now?
I feel like I'm only there now.
Yeah.
I wasn't content as a child. I was scared. I was anxious. Teenage years, I had phases of time where I was good, but I had always had problems with my stomach. And only now do I realise that was all anxiety. The fear of God in me to ever say anything that I was actually worried about. I remember being like dragged off to parties when I was in like fourth and fifth year. And I was like having the most visceral panic attacks, but not having the courage to say it. And so then it just kind of snowballed in my body. I just felt so out of step with the rest of the world. I felt like there was something wrong with me. I felt like none of my friends, they were like, what's wrong with you? Like, why are you always sick? And I was like, oh, I just a bug. That's just lasts a really long time. Mm. I felt like, even though I was popular or whatever, and I had friends and, you know, I did well in school, I felt like an outsider for the way I experienced things and the way I felt afraid of things and the way everyone else was wanted to go as far away from home as possible and go on J1s in college. I was like, oh my God, I could think of nothing worse. I was so afraid of being away from my literal comfort zone of my family. And then in my early 20s, then actually when I moved out of my house and started a new job, that's when the shit really hit the fan for me with the anxiety. And I also do think now part of that was probably letting go of my literal comfort zone of my parents' home and then entering a new home with my boyfriend. I think that was probably quite an adjustment, even subconsciously. And then I went through those awful few years. And I think honestly, only like probably approaching 30 and now do I feel more sure of who I am and accepting of it and just content. And the contentment I feel is the most, you know, it's not based on anything like being at a cool party. It's like waking up on a Sunday morning and having Barry brings up the dog and he sits with us on the bed and we might have breakfast in bed and watch some Netflix, and that, like, it does not get better than that to me.
Yeah.
And like, if I can appreciate that, I think it's a really good place to be.
Isn't that what it's all about though? Appreciating the simple stuff.
Yeah, I'm so grateful to for how simple that is. And it's just, yeah, that is what it's all about. And it's never going to be about anything more grandiose for me.
Yeah.
I hope I don't get carried away.
Well, you're using your experience constantly to grow and develop and improve, yeah. and not just yourself, but the impact you're having on those around you, and yeah. those who listen to you and those who read your books and all the rest. And if this doesn't, if this is not anxiety inducing as a question as well, I just finish up with Caroline, in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, you don't strike me as somebody who necessarily has like a life's plan, as it were, no. even though you're a constant creative force and you're constantly doing. Do you have anything like down the line?
What tends to happen with me with my creative ideas is I'll think of it and I will literally sit down and make it happen within a day. And so I'm very reactive and I'm very impulsive. And actually sometimes that goes against me. I guess I look ahead and I imagine myself, my goal is I want to maintain what I am doing now. I don't have any lofty goals of being, you know, I don't know where else I could go, but I don't want to be like famous with the books. I want to just be able to sustain the way I feel right now. And for me, that's continuing to write. I would like to have, I mean, my books come out in America. I would like for them to have a bit of impact over there.
Obviously, what if you don't have a choice? What if fame is part and parcel of the gig? You know, you are a name that people know now, and that's growing and growing and growing.
Yeah.
What if it happens?
Deal with
that when it happens?
I suppose my negativity bias would say that's not going to happen.
Okay.
Like I haven't entertained the thought that I could be that successful. But I guess it's how you measure success, really.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I wouldn't like to be recognized on the street, but I would love to be known for something that's of value, that's, you know, not just fame for fame's sake or anything like that. I think that kind of fame or just familiarity, I'd be okay with having that legacy and knowing that you created something that made a difference to people. And if you get known for that, then that's a good thing.
Wouldn't that be the greatest achievement anyway? Isn't that what it's all about?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. Caroline, thank you so much for a really interesting conversation. I've got a lot out of it and I'm sure those listening have as well. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Sheila.
If you enjoyed this week's conversation, please share it with friends and take a moment to rate, review and hit subscribe. I'd really appreciate it. And if there's anyone you'd like me to have a chat with, please do get in touch on Twitter or Instagram. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. You'll find me at Sheila Shoaga. Thanks so much for listening.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.